Sometimes Forex trading can be a wild and woolly place to be. But Forex trading doesn't have to be the Badlands for you, partner. Instead, hunker down and bend your ear. You'll be burning the breeze in no time here at the Truth About FX Podcast.
All right, today we have a very special guest. This trader has been one of probably... in the forum, probably one of our most popular members because he's been so generous with his time and has a great track record, one of the best track records of the traders in the forum. And of course, I'm speaking of James Kensington, who has the Umbrella Fund and Incendium Fund, which is correct, right, James? And you've been trading now naked for some time. And I gather from your collection of toys, you've been doing quite well.
That's correct, yes. I've been trading for quite a few years, and I think we were just mentioning before 2010 and when your book got released out in 2012. But yeah, I have collected quite a few nice toys along the way, but I prefer to keep those under wraps if I can.
Yeah.
I won't be giving it my license plate so I don't get stalked. I'm sure you've seen Supercars of London. Everyone runs around and tries to take pictures of your cars now. But I've had some nice toys, nice properties, and I'm set up for life, so I just really don't have to worry anymore.
Yeah.
But it was all thanks to consistent trading and learning the naked framework.
Yeah. So talk more about this. So when you got into trading, what was your motivation? Because I'm always curious. I mean, I know for me, it was more about trying to free up my time and trade the higher time frames and get away from working, exchanging money or exchanging time for money. Why did you get into trading, James? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that's actually a good point. At the time, this is when I was a lot younger as well, I was working in IT and I had got fed up with computers, so I travelled over to Queensland and was training to be a paramedic back then. And I realised once I had finally qualified, I had a very, very low salary and that I was never going to be able to afford anything I wanted and I'll be debt-ridden for the rest of my life. Because a lot of people don't realize is that paramedics and things like that, they get paid about 55K. I used to love the job, but it just wasn't enough. So I was working an IT job at the same time as well, and I was burning out on both ends. And then how it happened with me, I had a girlfriend at the time who was very good at finances, and she gave me a ticket to an FXCM course, and I went off and did this course. And this course back then was roughly like 30,000 Australian dollars. And I went and learnt about the principles of trading, and I happened to just have a great mentor in that course who happened to be exposed to a lot of this naked framework but through other traders. And he basically taught me from scratch, and we became very good friends. So that's how I started out in the industry. It was actually going and doing a serious trading course that was structured over a six-month period, and then ended up getting friendly with the instructor and going from there.
Wow, that's fascinating. So, I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned that he taught you from a naked point of view, because do you feel that is, you know, is that necessarily a big piece or a big part of the puzzle for you? Like, was it that learning how to trade naked was critical to your success, or do you think that really any sort of a framework would have worked in the end? I mean, I'm just curious, how much, I guess the question is, how much do you attribute your success to the fact that you trade naked?
I would say 80%, and a lot of people go jump on this. It's not just the naked part of it, it's the naked psychology. So a lot of very good traders, and especially this mentor, you would literally sit there, everyone's got they'd turn up to the course, they'd have all these cool little EAs and rubbish on their screen, and he would come in and he would go, right, I want you to delete all your profiles from your MetaTrader 4 platform and watch these people cry in the process. And I want you to delete every off the screen. We're just going to have blank charts, black and white, we're going to trade naked. And by trading naked, we're talking good risk management principles, reading raw price action, reading momentum, what's support and resistance, just the basics. And that an understanding how the market actually works, that it's actually a psychological market of buyers and sellers in the retail industry making decisions when they buy and sell, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's a human that makes that decision, not an economic indicator or anything like that. It's not a machine or anything. Obviously, nowadays with robotic trading, there are machines on the market, but that was the really key point, was going naked. And it made it so simple. So you're talking a system that's just bold, plain, simple, and straight to the point. I mean, most business people will tell you that the more simpler your structure is, the better off you are. So
wow, that's interesting. So what was it like in the beginning? Because if you're anything like me, I didn't actually find success very quickly. It took me years to work it out. So what was your experience like, James?
Well, you know, like every other trader, I blew up my first account. That's why I was a bit grumbly. And at the time, the girlfriend was saying, well, you've got to take this seriously. You know, you can't want to trade the financial markets without being educated. It's like throwing a two-year-old in a shark tank. It's not going to end well. That's kind of the way she put it. She was very intelligent, and she did the course alongside me. And she's actually a good trader. But she heavily loves indicators and things like that, whereas I'm more of a naked trader. And I hate to say it, I'm better than her by about, I don't know, 97% more. But we still talk a lot. But she's more heavily reliant on these indicators, whereas I think they do lag. But for me, what he did in the course was he basically had a really stringent thing. He said, right, we're not going to risk more than 1% a trade. You can take one trade a week, and this is sounding very familiar to my rhetoric, isn't it? One trade a week, 1% a trade. On top of that, you're not allowed to trade any real money. And he made us all sign that we wouldn't trade any real money. And he had that because obviously the broker knew if you were trading real money or not. And at that time, anyone who did trade real money was suspended from the course. And the idea was he wanted to vet out who was serious and who wasn't. But it was increasingly frustrating. When I first started to trade, I was not profitable. I used to lose a lot more than I used to win. I was impatient. I used to jump on all sorts of things before I got there. I used to listen to the news. And I can tell you now, I know how to news trade. And I'm actually good at it. But I've never seen news trading outperform technical trading. I think technicals is 80%, news is 20%, and then we'll get later on in that. Well, obviously, when we talk for the event, etc. But one of the biggest things for him was saying, don't trade your own real money. We're not here to wash away your capital. That was a big thing as well. And he only allowed us 15 minutes a day on the daily time frames when we first started. So we had to wait till the next day. And 15 minutes, and we had a clock and everything else, and we did assignments. And then it took me about 3.5 months to get consistent on the paper account, to start to understand all the price action, support, resistance, and all of that, and also to start eliminating all of that noise in the background, the news, these magic robotic EAs that everyone has. And trust me, I've tried and tested a few. I actually deliberately put up a robot system, and I'm glad to say that was competing against me, which will come out in a series soon, that actually failed just recently when the US election kicked in. And I won against it massively because it just couldn't predict the market. You know, as people, you know, think robots can, they don't understand the human factors. You know, for example, no one saw the fact that Trump would get in, even though they had a popular vote. You've got to have a better understanding of how the human factor of politics work. And, you know, at the end of the day, we saw a lot of robots call a bit of a black swan event where it dropped the markets down quite aggressively and then snapped back up to the normal levels. So, but for me, it was just paper account trading, having a good mentor. And I happen to know this individual as well through a group of friends. So, you know, he put a lot of extra time into me and often at no cost at all. You know, yes, we paid for the course, but all the extra hours of mentoring and stuff like that, he did it for free.
Well, that course would have saved me 3.5 years and several tens of thousands of dollars. I wish I would have run into that guy, but unfortunately for me, I didn't have anything like that back in 2000. It was just a different world, you know? And so it sounds like this guy was really good because he kind of set you up for success in that he kind of kept you away from the quicksand areas, didn't he? By the way that he trained you and made it and focused your attention on the right areas.
Exactly. And we started out with 60 students in that course, and we only had 11 by the end of it.
Yeah.
11 people and he became successful. So just to prove to you just how difficult it is, because a lot of people used to say, well, if I start off with $500 and I'm only making a dollar profit, this is going to take too long, et cetera, et cetera. The impatience is what kills traders, I think, these days, where they want to make money now, 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 and don't really see the long-term commitment involved in trading. To me, it's like a job. It's just that you need to approach it a little bit differently from that aspect. The more you work at trading, obviously in the live market, could actually work against you, whereas the more you backtest is good for you, but if you're in a live market, the more you trade can actually hurt you. So it's, yeah, there's some real twists and turns when you learn the theory side of it. But yeah, he was pretty much like my little, I call him Mother Teresa at the end of the day. Very kind, cool, but gives you the hard lessons. But even he in his life made some serious financial mistakes. The best traders in the world can get greedy, and that's, I'm sure you guys have seen some of them just recently take some big falls. But before that, before I got into FX, I was actually trading shares quite successfully, and I was taught that via my family. And I used to trade blue chip shares. I used to just trade the, you know, you got your oil and gas companies and your you know, your Rio Tintos and that, and I used to do all right on that trading. But it was so slow and convoluted, and you had to have six figures worth of cash to make $45,000, for example. So it was very slow, and you know, you might make one trade every you know, year, and you might have the option of returning some cash at 45K. But when it went against you, you had to sit and hold for a very long time for those shares to restore. And it often took years, you know. So, yeah, different industry, but I think I've always naturally just, you know, the fact that my family were always big into investments and stuff like that kind of why I always wanted to do it, you know, and partly me going into a profession that was wasn't paying very well at that time. That's all the difference.
Yeah, that's all the motivation you need sometimes. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't realize 55K in today's world is not a lot to live on. And then after that, we had the big IT boom, so I went straight back into IT afterwards, and then I ended up running my own IT company. But I think as well is that I was always driven to run a small business, and that's something I think as a trader, you have to be business-minded. You've got to want to be able to run your own business and deal with the fact that you might not have income for a week and actually be able to cope with that. And deal with the fact that there's going to be times where you don't have cash flow, and then there'll be times when you do have cash flow. So you have to be a very financially savvy person as well. People think that, like these days as traders, you can just sit at home and you print millions and millions of dollars. I couldn't say it's far from it. You might make a couple good winning trades a month, and you'll be happy, and then you'll get a month that loses. And so it's all actually about balancing the budget and making sure that you don't dig into your investment and keeping your lifestyle under control. So if you ever hear of traders who are running around with sports cars and houses, they must be borrowing the money, because you can't dig into your investment while you're growing it. It's true, because once you take away from your investment, then you've got less to invest and less to grow.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
and it is a catch-22.
Absolutely, and you start to see money as seeds of seeds that you can plant and grow these trees, you know. And it's not like money is something that your boss throws to you like a, you know, like a raw steak every other week or something like that. Money is like so precious because you've got to plant these things in your trading account and make them grow.
And I'm sure, Walters, when you were starting out, you're traders, I'm going to have to say this, we live under the, when you first start out in trading, I reckon we live under the unemployment line, technically.
Exactly.
With the cost of living. Because the first year is the most grueling, because you put everything on the line, in theory, and you're cutting into your hard cash and savings. And some people as well, it won't just be hard cash and savings. Some of that will be leveraged money. And it is really tough, and there's a lot of pressure. How I managed to take that pressure off me is, fortunately, I was always a very good saver. So, you know, when I used to go to the shops and stuff as a when in my first year of trading full-time, I would go out and get the black and gold, you know, rice or something like that. I wouldn't go out and fill up my car with Ultimate, you know. I was more prone to try and save every single penny, and I'm still like that now. Just because I've got lots of money doesn't mean I'm going to spend it down the drain, because money can be here today, gone tomorrow. You know, and it's been a hard road to earn it as well.
Yeah. So tell me, you spoke a little bit about the, you know, dealing with the drawdowns, and you know, I'd love to get a couple of tips or sage pieces of advice that you have for traders who are starting out. So one obviously is you just touched on, which is when you first start trading, it's so much easier to survive if you really cut back on your expenses. And if you live kind of, I mean, you will normally kind of end up in the situation where you're living, you really need to pull back on your expenses, whatever that means for you, you know, moving someplace that's cheaper, or, you know, getting rid of an extra car, or, you know, you don't have to go out and have that latte every morning, or whatever it is. You know, those are the sorts of things that I think it makes sense to, you know, alleviate that pressure in the beginning. And then you also talked about, you know, drawdowns and having a down month. You know, what are some of the strategies that you use in terms of dealing with drawdowns? Because that's, in my humble opinion, that's why most traders fail, is they don't have a plan for dealing with their drawdown, and they don't anticipate the drawdowns that they're likely to experience. They have no idea of what is likely to pop up down the road, because they haven't really considered that risk management part of their trading. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that's actually very important. Well, one of the key things I do, and it's something that traders will learn, you've got to be able to accept losses. And you've got to be able to accept that no matter how perfect your setup, you're going to be wrong at some point, and you're going to be wrong in succession. I used to be, you know, when I first went into it, I used to have a hard nose, and I thought I was perfect, and you know, but the first couple of weeks when I was trading live money, the drawdowns were emotionally destructive. You know, you'd be in tears one section, you see $1,000 disappear, you know, all proportionate to risk management as well. But $1,000, let's say you had 100K and you saw $1,000 disappear, it really does hurt you, even though it's a low risk trade. Your emotions will be up and down. It's learning to master those emotions. So one thing that I did is I would check the charts, and even today I check the charts. I tend to walk away from the charts. Once I've checked them and done my analysis, I switch off my screens and I get on with something else that's business related, or I go and relax. What I don't do is worry about the outcome. I accept that I'm going to get that outcome. I do a lot of things like meditation and so forth. And drawdowns are just part of it. People think that to have an amazing system, you have to have a small drawdown. Well, that's incorrect. I mean, I've gone over my actual trading history, and I've had anything up to 15 to 18% drawdown as a trader. And that's, you know, when I've made some big mistakes as well. And learning from that is so important. But one of the things I used to do is put in rules, like I would take one trade per week. If I had a losing streak of three trades, I would stop trading for the month and just do absolutely nothing, go back to the Forex tester charts and sort of go through my system to rebuild the confidence. But I just put in a structure where that in the event that the statistics were starting to roll into my favor where I was losing trades, I would make sure I would step away from the from the trading platform and then do the back testing to rebuild that confidence. But a lot of it was to do with less time in front of the charts, less stressing about trading. If you check, when you take a trade and you put in your trailing stop and your stop losses and you take profits, if you have to check back into that chart every single day, you're not ready to become a full-time trader. You got to be able to leave that trade unchecked for the whole week and come back on Friday and see if it's in profit or not. I think that's a real good test for a trader psychologically on how to take it. Another one is as well, I ended up putting in or buying certain programs that stopped me from taking multiple trades and banned me out of the system just to help myself. And there was a lot of little software you can put in. Obviously, you can log in and undo that, but I was very stringent that if I did try and revenge trade, I had a protection mechanism in place as well. I mean, just recently, I was trading non-stop and trying to get the service up, and I got so angry, I ended up punching a hole through a glass table, and I had to give Walters a ring and calm myself down, because trading can be very, very stressful.
Yeah.
And you know, in that case, I had lost $2.5 million on one trade, and a lot of people go, Jesus, that's a huge amount. It's not proportionate to the percentage of risks that I was doing. And then I had to get myself back down to reality. But I hold myself to a higher standard than others in trading, because another thing as well, I got used to winning all the time, and that's a really bad thing. When you get used to just winning and winning and winning, and then you have like 37 weeks of wins and then you have a drawdown, it's actually more painful for the winning trader. And that's the danger of, you know, jumping back in. But, for the couple of days, I just didn't trade, and then I got my thing. But just gives you an example that even the best of us, our emotions can get away from us. And, of course, once I'd had my meltdown and punched the table, I switched off all the computers and just left the trades running and spent the rest of the week doing gardening and relaxing and playing with the puppy next door.
So which of course is one of the that's really the key piece of advice here, is that the puppy next door is going to calm you down. The puppy next door is going to lower your blood pressure. Those are the sorts of things that actually are really helpful in getting away from the screen. Like that's another great piece of advice. I find that the best thing to do in a drawdown is to just walk away, take a holiday, or just get out of your wherever you live, the city that you live in, just get away from it. And then when you come back, like you say, build up your confidence with backtesting. That's just a great framework for traders who are considering, you know, what do I do when I run into these losing streaks? Because they are inevitable. Like you say, it doesn't matter how high your win rate is, you're going to have a losing streak. And like you say, it's a fair point. When you win a lot, it hurts even more when you lose.
It does. Another thing as well is, as a successful trader, people expect you to be, you know, you walk on water, and they want to see profits every minute. But that's the truth. Reality is, successful traders are just like yourself. They're normal. A lot of people are trading, and they'll trade six trades, and they'll have six losers, and then they'll have four winners, and they're right at the precipice of becoming successful, and they don't even see it because they've just started getting their statistics, and they've started an account, and it's growing. And this is why I've been doing this sort of signal service, to show people just what real trading is all about. It's not all bells and whistles. There are things, and I can be wrong just as anyone else, but it's all about soldiering on and keeping consistent to a plan and so forth. But so many traders didn't know they were profitable because they didn't give themselves a chance. Yeah. They just immediately thought after six losing trades that they're a bad trader, and because they lost more than they won, that immediately they're never going to be successful, when they just didn't let their statistics play out over time. And then you get the opposite trader that wants to do 400 trades in a week and burns out, and then he's so tired that he's doing all these trades on these small time frames that he misses one trade and forgets to put a stop loss in and wipes out his entire account. Yep. which is not the type of trading you want to do.
Yep.
You know, what we call, I know a lot of people in the forum who scalp are going to probably say this, But I had an intern recently who I was getting him to do an experimental scalping system. And within 24 hours, he had lost nearly 54% of the account that I had to freeze him. Not 54% of the equity, but 54% of his profits. I had to freeze his account and say, I told you so. That's why you don't trade like this. And of course, we always protect the account as well. He set it up, you know, it was $500. He's turned it to $1,400, and then he lost half of that $1,400 within a few minutes. Scalping is another part of the industry of trading that I fortunately was never exposed to, but I used to watch people completely melt down. Just Google scalping, a scalper loses all their money online. One of the best traders in the industry just recently quit, who's a scalper, due to stress. His blood pressure and that was so high, from what I understood, that he was going to have a heart attack. He just had enough. He may have been good at his particular method, but trading is designed to be relaxing, not to be, you know, life-threatening at the end of the day. People lose that. Don't see the main end goal is to work less and trade, put your trades in. You win your trades, you lose your trades. And at the end of the day, at the end of the year, with your edge, you end up with more profit than you had it originally when you started.
It definitely can break you down. And the only people I know that have been successful at scalping usually have some sort of like military background, or, you know, they've gone high up in sports. So they're kind of regimented, and they also always take long holidays. So they're not doing it all the time. And those are the only ones. And I strongly believe that most traders aren't able, they're just not cut out for it. I'm certainly not cut out for it. And I know that, you know, to me, the difference between scalping and trading the higher time frames, and when I say higher time frames, I mean like 4-hour, 8-hour, daily, weekly charts. That to me is the difference between working in a library and and toting an M16, you know, in a war zone, you know. it's totally different. It's like a totally different, completely different. It's completely different to your brain. It's completely different to the way you approach it. You know, trading those, and I know you know this, James. I mean, you trade the higher time frame charts. That's really where you live and make your money. But people think that to be a trader, you've got to always be doing something, and that means scalping. And the brokers love that. They love scalpers because they pay more in commissions. I mean, there's no way around it. So yeah, so.
Exactly. But the inherent issue with scalping, and this is where a lot of people don't understand it, is you're taking a very small position for a very high risk. So you're in a negative risk-reward ratio scenario. So you might take 10 trades and you've done really well, and within one trade, you've lost 50% of your previous winning trades. So could you cope with that psychologically? I know I wouldn't be able to. That's why I don't head down that track as well. But you are right. I mean, I prefer to be the, you know, at the end of the day, I look at it like this. When you retire, do you picture yourself as a relaxed, grey-haired individual, maybe with a bit of a pot belly from too much food, relaxing on the beach, enjoying their retirement? That's the type of trader, you know, you want to be at the end of the day, whereas, you know, to some people who maybe scalpers don't realize that when they get into their 60s and their 70s, they're not going to be able to rapidly fire anymore. They're going to fall asleep on the couch. And if you do that when you trade, when you're scalping, you'll probably lose all your money within probably 15 minutes. That sounds quite awful, but, you know, I'm the type of person that likes to set, forget, and relax. That's the type of lifestyle that the whole point of trading is. You don't see the guys in the big hedge funds even today, and I know a lot of them. You don't see them sitting there, you know, around a computer screen 24 hours, 7 days a week. Yes, they go to the office and they monitor the charts, and they have a coffee and they discuss strategies, but they have a very good work-life balance as well. You know, I mean, obviously they also have an income on top of that, which helps reduce their risk because they have a base income and they're earning commission. That's another thing as well. Don't get into trading full-time. Trade part-time. You don't have to be a full-time trader. Trade part-time. You can do this part-time, no problems at all. I did for years and years on end. I didn't go full-time and until probably in the last 6 years, I reckon, I went full-time because I was running a business as well. It's easy to trade part-time. You just have to be a bit disciplined about it. And then if you want to, if you make enough trading, then decide to move forward. But don't do the bit where you've got 5K in the account, and you've got to make 20K by Monday.
But
part-time trading, I think, is the best way, the best path.
Yeah, but you know what people are, some people are thinking right now, that's great for you, James, but you know, I know that if I were trading full-time, I wouldn't miss as many trades, or I'd make more money, or that. So what do you say when people say that? Because I know some people are listening right now, and they're thinking that.
Well, that's a misconception, and I'll prove this very over the couple of months. I'll give an example with the signal service that we're doing. You know, we're doing the hamster and the fat cat. And the fat cat is a slow trading method that captures, you're more picky about your trades, but it captures the trades over the long term, and you take very few positions. Then you've got the hamster. You're doing a lot of work during the week to get your trades. Yes, you get more winners, but you also get the same proportion of losers as well. But we're not over risking on that account as well. But you're going to see a significant difference in the effort it takes to get those two accounts together. You will find in the end that trading more frequently compared to trading less frequently actually has a null difference. In other words, you can trade less and achieve the same financial outcome as in trading more on the account. And people will go, what do you mean? You know, the true reality is that trading more does not lead to more profits. It just cycles your statistics quicker. That's it. And that's another thing as well. I do check the charts every 4 hours by SMS notification, and I flick through the charts sometimes. But if I can't be bothered trading the four-hour charts because I've got a kid's birthday or I've got family life, and I will generally go use the daily, but I've not actually seen a difference in my statistics. If I trade more during 1 week and I trade less on another strategy, which is sort of the same strategy with less trades, I still end up at the same financial performance. It might just be the fact that I'm a head case, but... But it's true. You're not missing out on trades. In fact, you're probably missing out on the same. So you're just doing more work. So let's say you miss out on 8 trades during the day, but you put 2 really good trades with the other with your long-term account. So you took trades. You've had 4. Let's say you had 6 winners and 2 losers, and then you've had two big winners on the other one, or 1 big winner. You're doing less work. And the idea of a trader is actually to do less work. The whole point of people doing trading is to put their trades in, relax, make profit. Also, once you start getting more money as a trader, and this is really important as well, you should start reversing your risk lower than 2%. Now, a lot of people disagree with me on this, and I've had some big grumbles about it when I've been training people. But I think if you can build an account by just taking, let's say, 0.25% on a position, you're a mature trader. Because at the end of the day, the whole point of growing money is not, let's say you end up with $3 million. 0.25% on a position is a serious amount of money to be growing. You don't always have to go up to that max level of risk. You know, I've had people argue this before. My 2% is my deadline. I don't really like going over that. But to me, the less, as you get more money, you want to take less risk. And people, will say, well, why? You want to be able to do less for more, so you become more efficient as a trader. It's like having a girlfriend, right? You don't go out and marry 8 girls in a week and then decide at the end of the week, once you've won or lost, which one was the best one. You want to invest in one girl, or maybe have another date on the side or whichever, and then eventually that person becomes a long-term partner. Same with trading. You don't want to have so many girls to satisfy, because eventually what's going to happen, you're going to have a heart attack.
Speak for yourself. No, I'm kidding. So that's interesting, because so the flip side of that, James, is, and I'm just interested to hear your perspective on this, is that if you say you should take less risk when your account is larger, does that mean that you would anticipate taking more risk when your account is smaller.
Well, that's another thing as well. When your account's smaller, because traders, when they, if you don't put a limit on them, it's 2%. Now, most hedge funds laugh at that. Okay, they laugh at 2%. They think 2% is not enough to grow. So 2% will be, you could turn 30K into half a million with 2% over 5 years. It's possible. But what I've done is, yes, I've reduced the risk. Is that so? You're actually becoming a less risky trader over time as you grow, because you learn the true value of money as well, and it also helps you adapt to the sudden changes in price. So we're not saying take more risk as a new trader. What we're saying is, if you can take 0.25% as a risk when you start, you're better off than someone who takes 2% risk per trade when they start, because you'll become a more mature trader. I mean, the end game is, I mean, I wish I knew that when I first started as well, is that taking less risk is actually much easier to cope with psychologically than taking more risk, and you're more likely to make better decisions.
Yes.
And you also have the opportunity to take more decisions if you stuff up. Because as a new trader, you're going to stuff up. You're going to make mistakes. Like I said, only last week I made a big mistake on a trade, and you know, disproportionately my emotions took control, and I cracked a very nice glass table with you know, and ended up making a bit of a fool of myself, and the priest was trying to bless me in the process. he's probably going get rid of that guy, he's got some sort of what do you call it, poltergeist in him. But you know, but here we go. Talk about trading. I've got someone who trades for me who makes no profit at all. All his money goes to someone else. As a priest, they give the money. It goes straight for not for profit. But because he loves it so much, when he started trading with me, he took a little bit higher risk. He was more 0.5% per trade, which, when you think about it, he would take two positions, that would be 1%. And he would never go over that. And he did better than a lot of the traders that I've taught in the past, because he seemed to be more understanding that more risk is not better at the end of the day. All more risk does to you is puts more pressure on you as a trader. It's funny, but the lower risk traders end up at the same. Let's say you do 2%. I did 2% trading this year, and they did 0.25%. At the end of the day, you look at the performance, and I'm not talking about the dollar value, but the performance of the thing. You'll probably find he performed better than the person taking the higher risk. It's a psychological hack, but yeah, I'm saying as you become a trader, you need to become more responsible over the years.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
Yeah, it's strange, but you know, hedge funds laugh at me for this, but you know, we don't lose all of our money. There's a difference. We keep our equity.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I was talking to a hedge fund trader a couple months ago, and he was saying, well, you know, if the I couldn't believe it, actually. He said, yeah, well, if the fund doesn't work out, I'll just have to do, you know, this and so, or change over to this and that. And I'm like, really? So that's the way to look at it was like, look, they're fully locked into this idea that the fund has this one idea. And if the idea pans out in the markets, they're going to make all this money and they're going to be fine. But if they're wrong, they're gonna totally blow up the fund. It's like they're not respecting their investors at all. I mean, it's just crazy to me. But yeah, I mean, it's the opposite of what you do, in that, you know, you essentially are backwards engineering. What are we trying to avoid here? Which is really, for those of you listening, that's really kind of the key here, is that you need to sort of look at, just as you were saying, backwards engineering your life. Where do you want to be later on in life? Do you want to be that trader who's a little bit tanned and relaxed with the pot belly sitting on the beach? Or do you want to be the guy that's totally frazzled and stressed out and has had, you know, all of these major life issues because he's been scalping all the time and driving himself insane? You know, where do you want to be? Same thing with your trading. You can say, look, what am I trying to avoid? What do I want to avoid in terms of drawdown? Well, that's really under your control. If you get a handle on your numbers, you can backwards engineer that so you don't get to that uncle point, that point where you're going to quit. So I think that's the major lesson here. The other thing I wanted to talk about is, you brought up some really interesting points about, what's interesting to me, James, is that you've got all of these really cool statistics because, as we know, you've been on the hunt for traders. and trying to find these traders that to come into your fund. And one of the things that I've noticed is that you have these really interesting statistics that you found out from basically all the data you've collected from your traders in your fund. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, that's not a problem at all. What we found out, I mean, one of the major statistics, and I find it really fascinating, is that after 3 months, the performance of the trade of drops, and that's something that people don't quite understand. But if you're trading for me for 3 months, and let's say you're doing very, very well, after a 3 months period, you do notice more mistakes start happening, more losing trades start to happen. So what we did with our statistics is we discovered that you need to cycle your traders, all including this part-time analogy where, you know, a trader is only good as how fresh and how his brain is working and how relaxed he is. It's just a very, very interesting statistic. And another one we got back was, which I found absolutely fascinating, was a statistic called fish netting, which is going to be one I'm going to introduce that Walters doesn't even know about, but it's an interesting one. Is that what we found out is that by dividing your position into four components, targeting a one-in-one, a one-in-two, a trailing stop, which is just a trailing position, and also a what we call a DAD, which is a pyramid position but with risk, a way of making your trade 21 times its profit, but doing it with only a set amount of risk. We found this process of fish netting, which means throwing a net out and targeting set points and then also having two trailing systems together, but and taking lower risk, we were able to capture more money, a lot more, and actually capture it more frequently. So you're being a runner and a gunner at the same time. And people challenge this to begin with. You can't be a runner, you can't be a gunner at the same time. Oh, yes, you can if you have right position management when you trend trade. And another thing we found statistically that was really important was with this double Bollinger Band system. Double Bollinger Bands, I didn't invent. They've been around for years. And Kathy Leinen and John Bollinger and Kamal and Chris from Luck Scout go into them in detail. They're just really training wheels. But what we found is that they were good to the traders when they first started out using this particular way of trading. They were able to identify swing points, price action, support and resistance levels much easier because the bands sort of encouraged them to look at the patterns that were coming up. But eventually we will drop those bands as we're training traders. But statistics-wise, the most interesting one, I think, out of all of them, apart from the fish netting, was the fact that traders after 3 months are more likely to lose more often. A good example, their statistics would go from 88% win rate, they would drop down to 74% after 3 months, then after 6 months they would get to 55% win rate, and then they would have a holiday, restart, refresh, and then it would be 88% again. So you had this descending curve. So I think trading all year round is a mistake. I trade all year round, yes, because, you know, you're a fund manager, you have to be available to your traders, but I don't always take all the positions either. But what I'm trying to do at the moment is cycle traders rather than keep them on, you know, set periods. Unfortunately, though, with the recent division of my company going independent from one of the larger funds, we did lose a few traders to the dark side. I'm sure they'll be blowing up accounts very soon. But, yeah. So yeah. That's why we're looking for people. But I'm not looking for people who want to become billionaires overnight. I want people that actually really enjoy their trading. They want to do well, be consistent, but also be happy to take a couple months off a year.
Yeah, 3 months out of the year, yeah.
Yeah, you know, be happy to make some profit and then walk away happy and smiling.
I think that what you've touched on is probably the big to me, that's the big takeaway point here, because I know a lot of traders, James, who in the forum, they've watched you trade. They see how you approach it. And then they go into Forex Tester and they try and test it out. And they're like, well, yeah, it's not really working to the same degree that it is for James. And I believe the reason why is because of the fishnetting thing you just talked about. I think that's one of the – I mean, I'd be really interested to hear what you say at the conference, because I think – to me, that's really the gold is in that idea, and being able to capitalize on the results of the trade, no matter what the trade does. And I think that's kind of that to me is kind of your secret sauce. I don't know if you agree with that, but I do believe that that's a big part of it.
Position management is a huge part of trading, and it's ignored for some reason.
Yeah, it's boring. It's not as exciting as talking about candles and stuff and patterns and stuff. That's why it's too boring.
I'm almost positive that when I came up with this idea, I may have read an article that you wrote about capturing profits when the good times roll in, is making sure that you capture profits when you're in a winning streak. And I remember reading an article based on something that you published on one of the major FX sites that talked about this very concept, that when the market is good, you need to capture profits. And often people, you know, they'll have a fixed 1-1 rather than a 1-2 and then a trailing. But by doing this method, you're always ready to capture the profits. I know this sounds bad, but have you ever seen these just huge fishing trawling boats that drag a net across the sea? Technically, that's what you're doing. And there's going to be a time when you accidentally catch a whale. And that's kind of what we want to do. We're happy to catch all the krill and all the normal fish and the normal income, but it's the real big positions, the big winners that will add to your edge. And the only way to do that is through fish netting. I know it's a fish concept, but I can't call it pyramid trading. Someone's probably already copyrighted that, but it's not traditional pyramid trading, you know, because we're not risking any more than what we put on per position. And that's another thing I've picked up as well, is that when you are doing position management, you might have to spend a few minutes doing it and a few minutes learning it. But I encourage people to test it. And the easy way to test it is go into Forex Tester, open four graphs in Forex Tester 3, take a 1-1 position with a 1-2 position, and then do a trailing stop position, and maybe do another trailing stop, because I haven't taught you guys DAD yet. We'll call it DAD, but RPS yet. Do two trailing stop positions and two fixed positions. Just try it out, see what happens. You'll be presently surprised. Or even better, just do 2 1-1 positions and two trailing stops and see what happens. Or just do one trailing stop and 1 1-1. They're just the simplest form of the fish netting. But there's so many different strategies you can put on that. Another thing I do that's different than other traders is, well, I've got 24 strategies. So have you ever felt like a broker's against you? And a lot of people do. They'll go, I feel like a broker's against me. My strategy's been going really well, and then all of a sudden I'm being slipped. And it does happen. I can tell you now that they do monitor those that are successful, because they want to capitalize off your accounts of diddly squat for free and make money off you. What you can do is have three effective strategies, and when you start to feel that strategy isn't working for you at that particular time, you can then change that strategy. And it does, A, it confuses the broker beyond belief, because he doesn't know what's going on now. And another one as well is that it might be more suitable to the market conditions, the other strategy. So having more than one strategy up your sleeve is actually quite smart, you know. And we found something else that may spook a little bit of traders as well, but we found out that having those different strategies being played out, that you were more or less likely to see slippage on your accounts. We're not saying brokers are scrupulous, but I do believe that they do copy your trades, and that's what causes the slippage. So just interesting facts there that you'll find when you trade, that one strategy isn't necessarily the best thing. Having maybe a portfolio of strategies to use is always good as well.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to have different accounts for different strategies, but what you're saying is switch it up, because that's going to make it a little bit more different or difficult for your broker to so essentially they could be front running your positions. Is that what you're saying when you're talking about, you know, slippage, is it that they're trying to basically use you as signals?
Yeah, so basically, because they're copying your position, and when you, obviously, when you, and also, you know, if you run a signal service as well, you've got lots of people copying your position, you're going to get slippage. It doesn't matter what you do. And that's something that you also need to be prepared for when you calculate your statistics, is that if, let's say, you aim for a $25 return, really you want to add in the slippage into that equation. So you might need to aim for 30 because you're going to get slipped 5 or something like that. But yeah, it keeps the broker at play. But also what it does is that the markets change over the years, and they go from a nice trending market to a ranging market. So if you have a strategy for a ranging market, which is actually, believe it or not, the core naked trading strategy that Walter's published is made for a ranging market. That's why I absolutely love that thing. And I use Walter's method time and time again, and I can't understand why some traders can't get it together with that method, because it's so simple. Whereas yours is it's more of a ranging and swing trading system, which allows you to trade the market no matter what conditions it's presently in. Whereas mine is more of a trend trading, so I have a 30% window for each pair each year. So if my pair suddenly starts getting all range bound, and then we'll start trading reversals and big shadows and kangaroo tails and so forth, just to mix it up a little bit as well. Because, you know, no one system, this is where people get it wrong, no one system indefinitely run will be perfect in every market condition. They just don't do it. That's why I always say, when it's ranging, stay out of the trades. Do not trade trend trading when there's a ranging market. Whereas, as your system, Walters, I think is more flexible when it comes to ranging markets.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the question, because I've heard a lot of traders talk about this idea of, you know, sort of knowing when the market's in a trend and knowing when the market's range bound, and sort of pulling a tool out of your tool chest, so to speak, when it's doing that. So do you do any of that at all? Do you try and sort of time it so you go, oh, we're trending now, so I'm going to pull out all my trending strategies? Or do you just apply the strategies regardless of what, you know, you think the market is doing?
Well, there's two things I do. I draw support and resistance levels, and I look for the big shadow bounce and the kangaroo tail bounce off those levels. So I know it's trending when it's doing that, because I can clearly see it. I also get a pencil, and I draw the swing points, and I look for a ladder. If I can see a ladder, or not a ladder, but better way, a staircase. If I can see a staircase, it's trending. You know, this is very simple. If the staircase is going up from one point to the screen to the other, it's trending. If the staircase is going down, then it's trending down. In a range market, if I can draw a line from the higher high to the next swing of the higher low and it's flat, then it's in a range-bound market. These are very simple things that people get wrong. There's no magical indicator or anything like that. You've got to look at the screen and actually see the pattern and draw, change it to a line graph and actually draw over the graph at the points where it bounces, and that's the best way to get it. And there's different ones as well. When you zoom out of your chart on a 4-hour time frame, you'll see a trending market going down for intraday only. Now, this is where people get confused. Intraday only. When you do a daily chart, it might be heading in the opposite direction. But if you're trading the intraday, you're only looking at a 4-hour period only for that trend. Same with the daily. You're looking for a combination of dailies to produce that trend. And a lot of people get confused when they trade the 4 hours and then try and use multi-time frames to help them enter the trade. You can never really see the way the graphs is. You could have an uptrend, and yet you've made money on the 4 hours on the downtrend. So yeah. What you've got to do is look at the graph that you're looking at, zoom out, draw the swing points, and determine if it's staircasing. If you're going up the stairs or you're going down the stairs, draw your support and resistance levels. I generally use dynamic support and resistance, but I don't, in a way, because I'm always drawing lines on support and resistance. If it's not on the graph, it's in my mind. I look for the peaks and where the busyness happens. And occasionally, when I haven't, I've gotten to a point where you get into market churn and the trade just goes nowhere and you have to shut it down. That's another thing, knowing when to shut the trade down. If you've had a trade running for a few days and it's just going absolutely nowhere, the best thing is to close the trade. And, you know, because it'll come back to your break-even point. You know, and here we go. If you know a trade's, if you've got two trades skyrocketing in the correct direction and it's making you profit and you're happy and you know the other trade is a correlation factor and it's starting to sink, you might want to cut those trades out just a little bit earlier to be conservative. Originally, I wasn't like that, but as I've grown as a trader, I kind of, you know, want to, you know what they say, keep your losses small, keep your wins big at the end of the day. And you can't, that's why fishnetting works so well, because, you know, it kind of protects you a little bit if you don't get that right. But yeah, trend trading is so easy. If you've got a pencil and you can draw a staircase, then you can trend trade. If you can draw two lines between two mountains, you can range trade, you know.
So you don't need the thunder turbo regression indicator that flashes green or red when the market's trending up or down. What you're saying is you don't need these super fancy things. Like I always like, the good news is, like, if you have a little kid, you can just put the line chart on there and ask them whether it's going up or down.
That's the thing. You don't need a strength proximity meter, and you don't need the latest version of FAP Turbo.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the point. Yeah.
But a lot of people go, you know, then James, why did you start me on Bollinger Bands? And it's purely to help you visualize what's going on. You know, people don't realize the bands are not making you money. No, it's the patterns that you are following when you're trading. You see a good pattern of trading, and it helps you determine, you know, yes, this is a beautiful pattern. Eventually, if you dropped all the bands off and you circled the trade, or just on the pattern, you would be free of the bands. It's the same thing. Someone said to me yesterday, if I get a big shadow off the MA, which is sort of the mean position of the band, can I take the trade? I said, of course you can. Why wouldn't you take the trade? That's a clear price action continuation pattern. And he said, oh, but it doesn't have to be off the mean. I said, look, draw a staircase, draw your lines, draw your higher lows and higher highs, and then draw support and resistance. What does it tell you? Oh, that is about, that's a support point is going to bounce off it. So in the way, the people think the lines are magic, but they're not. It's just a different way of drawing support and resistance. But the true reality, you're still going to have to do your support and resistance homework. I mean, I'll be frightened if people just jump onto a system and just trade it because the arrow says up or down. You will lose. You will lose fantastically. You will lose badly, because then you're not being picky about the trades that you take as well. So you have to be picky. You have to pick a perfect setup that's got all those little characteristics in it. But yeah, if you want indicators that flash and beep and go, you know, then fine, make those guys rich. But I tell you what, none of them are traders, and I don't know any robot in the world that's been successful. By the way, another one that's come out that we actually busted just recently, and I think there's a thing called TradingSchool.org that's really, really good, that stops people from being scammed, is MathFX Pro. We guys actually put this thing to the test, and it did blisteringly good against me for the first month. It made me look like a trader that, you know, wasn't as good as this particular system. But then within 24 hours, it had blown up, you know, 90% of its equity. And I was happily doing a little jig, because we were worried this robot would take over the world. You know, because I always get worried, because automation, you know, one day they will crack it. But the point is that because, as long as they have human participants trading the market, there is no point having. If they had robot participants trading the market, then it'll be easy to identify, because the logic behind the robot will trade the market at a particular way and it will produce a particular pattern. But because people trade the markets, they trade it with their emotions. In fact, that bar going up, that soaring through the as a big shadow, is a whole point of people getting all excited and putting a buy trade in. Another thing people get confused is that they think the retail market is connected to the interbank system. It is and it isn't. A lot of people don't see the trades that the big banks put in, and they never will. And people think that, here we go, that banks make money trading Forex. Not quite. And this is where people get confused. they make money off the spread, yes, of the difference of the currencies. But the only reason why they trade currencies in the first place is to allow companies to operate in different holdings. So, for example, I've got a Microsoft in Australia that's trading in Australian dollars, and it needs more Australian dollar cash flow. Its U.S. counterpart contacts the bank. The bank charges them a ridiculous exchange rate, and I'm talking ridiculous. They send it to them, so the bank always wins. He's always going to make money out of you, no matter what, because he does cash FX, and that's probably one of the most efficient ways of trading in FX is with cash. But we are on a market where we're competing against each other. So if you think you're competing against the banks, you're incorrect. We're actually, as retail funds, we're competing against each other.
Yep.
And that's it. We're just taking money out of one pocket and putting it into another.
Yep.
And you shouldn't feel bad. Like, I know some people think, well, or maybe some people don't, but, you know, people sometimes will say, well, you know, so I'm taking money from other retail traders. Well, yeah, and in theory, they should be learning lessons when they make mistakes and you win because they were on the other side of your trade. They should be learning those lessons. I mean, it took me, like, I'm thick-headed, so it took me 4 years plus to learn those lessons. But you know, I mean, that's basically what's happening here is people are either risking too much, blowing up their accounts and giving up, or they're risking too much, learning their lessons, and then they finally turn the corner and they become profitable. But you're absolutely right. We're in this retail parallel universe. And the way that the banks trade is totally different. And we've got one of our other speakers, James, is actually from the banking world. And he's going to talk about how he trades and how it's a completely different universe to what it's like when you're trading in the retail world. So that'll be interesting for listeners too. So I like that approach because as you know, James, a lot of traders talk about the banks and the brokers as if they are the boogeyman, you know, and the boogeyman's out to get you. Oh, poor me. I can't make money trading Forex because the boogeyman's going to get me. But as we know, that's not really the case.
In fact, most of the times the banks aren't participating at all. People don't know that. It's their job is to make sure companies have international currency and they sell it for a profit. And, you know, if you ever go to a bank and pick up cash, a foreign currency, you get charged, everyone gets charged an exuberant amount of fees for it. And there is a reason for that because you're paying the spread plus the profit that they want to make on top. And it's a big industry. Cash exchange is a big industry for business. Otherwise, they couldn't operate around the world. But yeah, everyone thinks they're the boogeyman. A lot of them actually don't even have trade desks. That'll throw you. They only deal in business-to-business movement of money. That's it. So they only exchange currency to keep their business investors happy because they have money in bank accounts all over the world. When you talk about a hedge fund, and the hedge funds don't tell you this either, the hedge funds compete in the retail market space, not in the banking market space. The big banks that trade have their own network, and it's completely different. Now, a lot of people will say, yes, the banks can move the markets, but they don't. The banks cause people to panic and buy into the markets because news causes speculation. Now, this is another thing as well people don't understand. News is designed to fill the gap in the market. So if I speculate that the euro is going to go up because of good news, I'm creating a form of pump and dump in the exchange market. Without news traders, we would have such huge spreads and we wouldn't be able to trade at all. So by people speculating and causing people to trade in the one direction to move the market by, you know, maybe brainwashing them a little bit, that's actually good for traders. It creates volatility. But it does make me laugh when people say to me, the big banks move the markets. They do by word of mouth. That's it. It's a pump and dump in the retail sector, and people don't realize that. And what I mean by pump and dump, if we look for the price action patterns to confirm that pumping of cash into the industry is happening. But if a big bank turns around to you as someone who stores money and says, James, you know, the euro is going to go up in the next 3 months. Who do you trust, the bank or some guy on a forum saying, no, it's not going to go up? You trust the bank, so everyone buys into that investment portfolio. And that's where speculation happens. So if it, and here's another thing. If we didn't have people losing and speculators and news traders and different traders, we wouldn't be able to trade FX. So they're actually really integral in the market.
Absolutely. 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 That's what makes it such a liquid market. Yeah. And what's interesting is what you're saying kind of fits with what a friend of mine, he's a financial journalist, and he's been a financial journalist for decades for Reuters. And he says they'll get these canned news stories all the time that come in from, say, Goldman. We'll send them a story about why gold's going to go up. And they want Reuters to run the story about gold so that they can pump and dump the market. They want all these punters to jump in on and buy gold so that they can sell it in a couple of months, you know? And these things are crazy. People don't realize that this is exactly what's going on. And so I think that I'm really looking forward actually to your talk, James, at the event, because I'll be interested to see how what you say, what you talk about in terms of these about the news, you know, and you mentioned that 80% of your trading is based on technicals and 20% on the news. Be interesting to see how that jives with people, because I think it's going to be quite shocking when people hear this.
Well, that's just the thing as well, and people have got to understand, and this is so important with trading, we've got to be aware of the news as traders, and that's the true reality of it. Yes, we are technical traders, but having a bit of fundamental knowledge isn't bad, but it's the immediate knowledge that you want to know. So when Trump sneezes and says he's going to war with some other country because, you know, someone stole his donuts or something like that, and the market all of a sudden rises, believe it or not, that type of news trading will then print a price action pattern and you'll jump on it and make some money. But again, that great speculation in the market, that little bit does help you have a little bit of an edge. You don't trade purely with news. I wouldn't anyway, because, you know, the true reality, if you're on the, you know, any pump and dump scheme, if you're at the latest into the pump and dump screen, you're going to lose. And that's the true reality of it. And someone like a hedge fund has billions and billions of dollars, and they've already exited the position by the time they've advertised the pump. So they've already made their money and left the market at the same time.
Right.
You know, and it's brilliant. I reckon, no kidding, if I got together a group and I said to everyone in that group in the world who trades FX, I want you all to buy into the euro for the next couple of months, we'd have a lot of rich people. But there will be, unfortunately, people that got in too late and would have lost money. But I think it's like any market, isn't it? It's interesting, you know. But controlling the FX market is the hardest part. No one really can control it, because if we did coordinated buying, I think all the brokers would go bankrupt overnight. You know, because they're a leveraged product at the end of the day. They've got to get capital from somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, yeah, so this has been fascinating, James. Is there anything that you want to leave us with in closing? Because I'm looking forward to seeing you at the event, and I'm excited to hear, you know, some of your other techniques in terms of the news and how that relates to your trading. Also, I know that you're actively recruiting people. You're stealing traders out of the forum, so there are some positions that you're looking to fill because your traders have been poached, as you say. So you'll be looking for traders as well, I suppose.
Well, we've already got, like, give an example, just to show you, I've already got one trader who used to be on the forum, but I had to cut all information out of his trading, so because he was listening to too much noise, and, you know, because sometimes people in the forum will talk about different methods, and if you're a bit susceptible like a sponge, you won't trade well. It's really on your psychology side of it. But I've already got one trader from the forum who started a trial with me. I've already got an experienced trader coming on board who's a super duper trader. Who probably will eventually be doing a business partnership with our fund, but I'll let him announce it in the new year if he wants to, because it's, you know, a little bit of pressure on. But you can become a trader, and at the end of the day, you don't have to be anyone special. So if I see people that I think are consistent, and they don't necessarily have to trade like me, I've learned this valuable lesson that as long as they have good risk management, they have a good edge, and they're more technical, that's all I want at the end of the day. And it's not about how much you make. If you make 30% or 10% or 20% in the year, that is still very good, because compounding will fill in the rest. That's it.
Well, the problem is compounding only works if you're patient enough to allow it to work.
Exactly. It's, you know, the kid that used to put his pennies in the bank account, and at the end of the month, he would have a whole dollar of extra interest, and then he would go to the store and buy more lollipops than you. That's a good thing. But now, again, you can go to... I think Japan's got negative interest rates. That's a new one. I wonder how they're doing it. So you now put your money in the bank account, and the person that you know, obviously you put the money in the bank account, and you're paying other people who are borrowing your money a charge. I think it's quite funny.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know? It's crazy, yeah.
I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for that big pop to happen. I can't wait to see it happen. I know, again, I sound like Dr. Evil, don't I? I can't wait till the Japanese economy collapses so I can make some money. But this is the game, name and game of currencies. You want volatility in the market. And that's it. You really do. You want volatility in the market so you can make money.
Yep, that's it. All right, James. Well, thanks so much for your time. This has been really good, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in London.
I certainly will, and I look forward to seeing you all there.
See you. Okay, thanks, James. Bye.
See you, Walters. Bye.